You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Welcome to Half Hour with Jeff and Richie, the podcast where we take a deeper dive into the latest shows we see, sharing our insights and opinions on the performances, storyline, and everything in between.
In today's episode, we'll be discussing the new Broadway musical, The Notebook. Whether you're unable to catch the show in person or you're looking to expand your thoughts after seeing it, this episode is for you.
And as always, we want to give you a heads up that this episode will contain spoilers. So if you're ready to dive into this production, stick around with us. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Bridgie. We're thrilled to be your host for this episode. So without further ado, let's start the conversation about The Notebook on Broadway.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Half hour.
Okay, welcome everyone to a new episode of Half Hour with Jeff and Richie. Today we're talking about the new Broadway musical, The Notebook.
The Notebook is a new musical based on the best-selling novel that inspired the iconic film written by, and the novel we know is by Nicholas Sparks. Ali and Noah, both from different worlds, share a lifetime of love despite the forces that threaten to pull them apart, in a deeply moving portrait of the enduring power of love. The Notebook is directed by Michael Greif and Shelley Williams and features music and lyrics by multi-platinum singer-songwriter Ingrid Michaelson, booked by Becca Brunstetter, and choreography by Katie Sp-
Okay, as always, let's start with our bold statement about this piece and see how that unfolds into our discussion.
Okay.
So, my bold statement on this...
Go, I can't wait.
...is... Bold statement on The Notebook is... Marianne Plunkett is, by far, the biggest person to watch in this Tony Award season.
Nice. Totally agree. My bold statement is, other than an extremely captivating and moving, groundbreaking performance by Marianne Plunkett, I found the majority of The Notebook on Broadway to be extremely underwhelming.
Okay, let's get into it right away.
Well, let's just start with just our overall thought on this concept. I don't think we need to really go into much plot because the majority of the world knows this plot. And that actually is something I do want to talk about a little later on. But since we all kind of know the plot, and I think most people can either read the book or see the movie and understand that, let's just talk about the stage adaptation of bringing this live with the character development and, and the music addition and the scenery and things like that.
Great. I feel like, first off, what do we like that did kind of come along from the book and the movie to the stage?
So the whole overall plot basically staying the same for the most part. Of course, we had a shift in time period. The flashing back and forward from the nursing home works, obviously, because the ending needs to happen in that way.
Which is always the part of that.
Right. And I think the flow of then the older couple being interstitial to the plot, like the film and book does, is very important. And I think that worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to me that two actors in the movie played Ali and two actors in the movie played Noah. And now we've gone to three actors playing Noah and three actors play Ali. And in my head, before I saw this, I thought, oh, that's a great concept. Like, it totally makes sense. I don't think it worked, quite frankly, in the way that it was put up there. And I think it could have. And that's what bothers me is I think you could have had eight Allies and Noahs and it could have worked. You could have had one. You could have had two. It doesn't even matter the number per se. It was the way that it was executed didn't quite work for me. And I couldn't find emotional attachment to any of them because they were only playing that character for 25% of the show, 35% of the show. And so it was hard for me to really attach myself to the character and the relationships of the characters because there were six of them out
there. Yeah. I mean, I feel like I mostly agree with you on this.
Okay.
I was really intrigued by, like, seeing younger Allie and Noah, middle Allie and Noah, and then older Allie and Noah, where I feel like something that they should have probably brought along with from the film is just having a younger Allie and Noah and an older Allie and Noah. Because I do agree with you. I don't think there was enough development in the actual piece for middle Allie and middle Noah.
Correct. And I feel like their relationship of when she goes back to the house was like, wait, we didn't see them much.
Yeah.
We saw them younger, but and listen, I love the colorblind casting aspect of this. I think that works really well. I love seeing the different ages. I'm talking about the literal usage of the book of incorporating actors in. And so to me, yes. I'm going to say something. I think what was directed, though, was nice. Mm-hmm. I loved some of the moments where older Allie was reflecting on her life, and there was that song where the two younger Allies were with her. Beautiful. Gorgeous. It's towards the end of Act One when she's older Allie's moving through her life and all these people. It totally works. I think it was directed for what it was given, but I don't think the book scenes and the score worked at all for what we were supposed to feel. Mm-hmm. And I think that I don't even think all the acting choices were actually at its best. And we'll talk about actors in a second. I just found that, yes, you had two brilliant directors on this that worked well, but I didn't think the book and the score did what movie or original novel does to the person reading or watching.
It kind of like, I know this is not really like a plot point, but like from the overall experience in this moment here, it seems like they wanted to take the best moments of the film and also still give that to us. So it's like we have the rain scene. That to me even felt underwhelming.
Yeah, because it was like, up here's that scene, like kind of. But it was kind of cool that the water was in the front of the stage and then it rained. I did like.
But again, if we're going to talk about things, we've had rain on a stage before.
Yeah.
This is nothing new.
Yeah.
So if we're going to do this, that better be a great scene that we're seeing. And it felt so rushed. I was like, wait, no. Why are we rushing out of this rain scene right now?
And there was other moments where I don't know. I wasn't feeling. Is that weird? I wasn't feeling we just watched the movie again. And I really was moved again all these years later at the very end. I was very emotionally attached to it. I wasn't feeling anything for that. I take the back. I really felt for Miriam Plunk.
Right.
And there, and I hate to say it, but I didn't really feel as much for Dorian Harewood, I believe, who played the older Noah. I didn't really feel like there was the equal acting amongst the two of them. But then I felt for, like, wow, Joy Woods was doing some amazing things. It was inconsistent for me throughout.
Yeah. I feel like before we move into cast and like direction, because I feel like that's where we're going to spend most of our time in this conversation, just overall concept, I feel like they had an idea. It should really work. And there was definitely something missing. And I feel like that right there is going to move us now into the actual creative choices.
Well, let's go into some of those creative choices and let's start with the score.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome back. I understand Ingrid Michaelson's work. I understand how she writes. It's very like moody coffee shop, rainy day. This is how I feel. And of course, Notebook is that like emotional mood show.
Yeah.
To me, there was major musical theater moments missing. I'm not saying we need an up-tempo dance break. I'm not saying we need an 11 o'clock number ballad. Those are very standard in musical theater. To me, I feel like I was missing any attachment to the majority of this music. All the songs to me sounded like they were in the same key. All the songs to me sounded like they were the same tempo. And I don't feel that way with a lot of modern scores. I don't mean to compare this to like Waitress, but Waitress has up-tempo and ballad and moving moments and sad moments and happy moments. And the emotions of that, because Sarah Bareilles writes like that, worked for that piece.
Yeah.
Even though maybe I didn't like every single song on Waitress, but I still appreciated what was done. I look at this whole score from Ingrid and I say, I couldn't tell you one song from it. I didn't know. Some songs kind of ended and then we were in the nursing home and we couldn't applaud because then we went right into a scene. So it was like filmic in the way it was like transitioning from song to song. I didn't feel like there was enough rooted. I'm listening to the lyrics. Nothing stuck with me. The book scene seemed a little stiff. I just didn't feel, and if musical theater is supposed to emote and bring you to the next level of emotion that a text cannot, the famous saying is when the words end and the emotion begins, that's when the music starts, in love and death and whatever aspect of the musical theater art form. I wasn't feeling anything. And then I thought to myself, oh, well, they're going to get Marianne Plunkett this huge, big 11 o'clock number, right? Like Mama's Roses moment, like not the same, but you know, we're going to get that huge moment from her, right? And then what did we get? 20 seconds of one song of her maybe singing a little bit?
Yeah.
What a missed opportunity for me. What a completely missed opportunity for me.
I feel like with this score and the lyrics as well, I am not holding a candle to it as high as you are, because I feel like my expectations for this was not that high when it came to the music and lyrics, because I kind of know Ingrid. I know the way she writes. It is that moody, like coffee shop sound that she's always had. So it's not like this is anything different. So instead, she just wrote an album for the theater.
It is an album for the theater. It's not. It was like I wrote this pop album and now you figure out how to direct it and put it into the story now, team.
Right.
Instead of her feeling like she really collaborated, it doesn't seem like she really, really, really thought about, wow, this character's moment here. Instead, it was like, hey, Ingrid, we need three sad songs, one happy song there, and then a moment there. Go. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
Machine, factory.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate because I really didn't want that.
I didn't either.
I did want to get surprised and have something very different than what we were going to expect from Ingrid. And I guess my letdown here is, though, that like she did give me what I thought we were going to get. It was very predictable.
It's funny because recently we were watching the Alex Newell video of Back to Before from Ragtime. And what did I say to you when we watched it? I said, yeah. Where was this moment in this show? Ragtime, I mean, oh, hello, the score. When you hear the orchestrations and you see what Mother's character is going through and singing Back to Before, and you're like, oh my gosh, I feel everything for this person right now. There was none of that here. I mean, I shouldn't say none, maybe 10%.
Yeah.
I just didn't feel anything from that music. And then the book scenes were like, hey, hi, my name's Noah. My name's Allie. Give me a break. I'm sorry. I was like, what am I doing here? And then to hear like, and here's another thing of the score, because we have other things to talk about. I am really getting sick and tired of every show ending with, I'm home. This is my home. I've come home. You are my home. I'm like, what are we doing? And then to hear people around me sniffling, like, oh my God, they're home. She's home. We're home. We're
okay.
home. I'm like, what are we crying about? Okay. Every show ends with home.
So that's what I want to have towards the end of this podcast, because this is a big topic of the conversation today.
Okay, we'll save it. Let's go on to some other choices.
I'm going to applaud a few things here. I know you're not going to agree with some of them.
That's okay.
I loved the scenic design of the show. I thought it was completely warranted and fit the vibe of what that show needs to be. I know, yes, it's like sometimes bare and whatever, but I loved the use of water. I loved the use of brain in there. It was great in that aspect. And it did help for these actors to move and flow throughout that stage.
I half agree with you and I half don't, because the bare bones-esque stripped down literal holes in the walls and things do kind of mimic her memory. Mm-hmm. And how she's not going to remember every little flower pod and little design.
Right.
Of course, I get that. I think that's actually smart. And when I'm seeing more detail in the color of the walls of the nursing home than the non-existent wall of the home from the memory, I say, well, the whole point of this was that he fixed the house and she came back and the house is beautiful again. And maybe we're seeing the nursing home in full detail because that's her current memory of what she can currently see. Sure, then we can go with that. And I get it. But there's something still glorious about this home that he spent his whole life fixing, thinking he would never see her again. That I think when we see a bare bones porch with not even a rocking chair on it, just a blank porch. I don't know.
Do kind of feel like they are supposed to be the little pockets of things that she actually remembers. So, like, we're seeing the door and the front porch because that's what she remembers.
Yeah.
So, it works in that way. Is it a cop-out for, like, not having a big, grandiose set? Sure, maybe.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say I enjoyed this scenic design because it's better than some of the other things I've seen on the, on the stage lately.
I also
Other than that, I do thought it was directed well.
Yeah, I agree. I thought there were some nice directing choices because it flowed. I didn't feel like I was watching a 2.5-hour show. You know,
I'm not really sure what the choreography was in the show.
I didn't really get the choreography. There was movement. There was a lot of staged movement. I will also say the costume design was smart because they always had Noah in a brown and they always had Allie in a blue in different types. And I think that's really smart design. Yeah. When you change the style of the garment, but the color stayed the same, even when she was in the bathrobe at the end as the elderly woman. I actually really liked. Not to be like, hey, audience, this is the same character, because I think it was a little bit of that, but I think it worked with the color choice.
And then just kind of like moving past this now a little bit more to is like, who actually stood out to you and like brought something different to these roles?
Okay, if I have to choose three people, four, I'll go with John Cardoza as young Noah. I thought sings really well, and I really was taken by him.
Yeah.
I would say Joy Woods, while I don't think her part was written correctly for her, she gave it her all in her moments. I could definitely see a potential Tony nomination there. I think she's really exuding a lot in what she's given. She's only given so much.
Yeah.
But to me, the third and final, there is extremely... And talk about smart direction, putting Marion Plunkett on that stage for the majority of the show. In the movie, they don't do that, right? The movie, they remove her for 20-minute time segments, and then we flash forward. To put her on the side of the stage or in the back of the stage and have us watch her life is brilliant direction and brilliant acting. And I think Marion Plunkett could get, I don't know if she would get supporting actress or leading actress, because it's very tough. She doesn't sing a lot in the show, but she is in the majority of the show. But Marion Plunkett is carrying this whole show by herself in brilliant Tony-worthy moments that moved me. And the only times I felt moved was watching her. The only times I was completely moved by her. And I think that woman should get many accolades for what she's doing at this.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's why I'm saying, like, everyone should be on the lookout for this woman to be here in up for as a big Tony contender.
Correct.
Because what she's doing in terms of acting, it's going to give people in the play category. I mean, it gives people in the play category a run for their money in terms of acting. But this is a musical, so it's going to be actress in a musical. And yes, does she not have a major song? She has one, but it's not a power belt.
Which leads me to believe that someone like Joy or someone like her, I don't know if anybody here is really eligible for leading. And if the producers of this show are noticing that so many other shows have big leading, they might want to consider putting some people in for supporting consideration, because they might have a better chance, because there's not one leading person here. But yeah. When you talk about Cabaret, Limpica, some of these other things, there's leads. Barely We Roll Along, there's leading people in some of these shows. So I don't know. Those are my three standouts, though. I don't know if you have the same or not.
I mean, she was really my only standout. And here's my critique on the overall cast. And mainly speaking about the three Allies and the three Noahs. There was not enough of a through line between their character for me to believe that they were all supposed to be the same person.
Because there was no connection with plot or dialogue or...
They all played the role way too different.
Way too different. Yep.
So the only way this would have worked is if we had young Allie and old Allie, young Noah and old Noah, because Joy Woods and Jordan Tyson are not playing the same Allie, and Ryan Vasquez and John Cardoza are not playing the same Noah. They're way too different, and their age is too similar for it to be any sort of different.
And I'm going to take it a step further.
This is what, if we were going to introduce a third Allie and Noah, it would have had to have been completely out of the storyline that we would not have known it. And it would have had to have been them as kids. And that's not part of the story.
Or opposite, when they're like in their 50s and they have children and they're married already. Maybe a part of the story that we don't really see.
Yeah, but that's Joy and Ryan.
Yeah,
playing those two, that's when they're older.
But I'm even going to go a step further and say, what would have been, it's theater. We make magic in theater with wigs, makeup, costume changes. I think we saw Mrs. Doubtfire change in and out of Mrs. Doubtfire a million times brilliantly, right? Like, we can make magic happen in a Broadway show. What, just a thought, could one actor have played Elliot, one actor played Noah, and we see them go back and forth in style? You would have removed the whole elderly Allie and Noah watching them. I get that. That worked. Just throwing it out there as a potential. Could a director
no, because
said,
I think
the one person, because maybe you would have felt more connection.
No. The whole point is
just an idea
that they're watching flashbacks. So you need the younger. I just don't know if they needed to separate the role. It didn't give enough connection for either Jordan or Joy to be the Allie that you connect with. Because you're going back and forth between the two of them. And the same thing with Ryan and John. I was feeling more connected to John playing the role of Noah because he understood the assignment of being in love. I don't think Ryan felt any sort of connection or love for Allie. And he was trying to play this cool, suave guy, but also sometimes like no emotion. And that's not Noah.
And when you, and not to compare it to Rachel McAdams and Ryan Gosling, but when you see them start in the beginning of the film at the carnival, and then you see them end at the end of the film, those are actor journeys over years, but they made the journey. And maybe this was robbing an actor or actress of doing the same thing and taking us on a journey from youth all the way through. And I don't know. I still think, though, that this whole show is being carried on the shoulders of Mary Blunkett. The whole.
Yeah.
And thank God, because that is such a tough character. You need someone to carry it.
But what's also super interesting, too, is they all had a 11 o'clock number somewhere throughout the show. And I'm like, why? Why is this one having this moment now? And now we're having older Noah have his moment before even Act One is over. The flow just seemed off. There wasn't enough unison. And I actually think the memories needed to do more with Mary, old Allie and
Marianne.
Marianne. But I'm saying I think the memory moments needed to do more with them. Where the musical theater moment could have came in.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot of watching them, which was great because she's acting throughout that whole thing. but there wasn't enough connection. I thought one of the most beautiful moments was when she's having a memory moment on stage. They're all singing around her. That's musical theater there. So it had great moments, but it wasn't perfect.
Right. There were moments. And then there were some stiff, slow moments. And then there were some beautiful moments.
Yeah.
And it kind of does bring me a little bit to just our overall experience with the show as a whole. And this is what I kind of want to talk about towards the end here. What are your thoughts on when everyone knows a plot?
We'll be right back.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let's jump back into things.
And everyone knows how this story ends. Because when I in the audience, when they get into the bed at the end and she says, I'm tired. And he says, I am too. Will you lay with me? And they say, yes. How many people in that audience did you hear go, oh, yeah. Like we all knew what was coming. And because the majority of the people going to this know exactly what's coming, does that alter your state of emotion compared to someone who would have had no idea how this ends? I think it does.
I think it does, too. So one thing I was going to say is that this is a hard film and also book to transfer to the stage because of how iconic it already was. So the fact of like moving this to the stage already, the odds are against you because you're now going down the same path of everything else that comes to the stage because people are going to compare it to something that's already done it well.
We can talk about so many films that have already done that. The Wizard of Oz, The Sound of Music. These are iconic films that when people see the stage version, they're like, oh, that's not like Julie Andrews. That's not like Judy Garland. And that's what people do. Mm-hmm. However, I feel like I was surrounded by a lot of crying people. And I'm not trying to judge people when they feel emotions in a theater. Feel what you need to feel. That's the whole point of the art form. But I do feel like there was one too many of the, oh, I'm supposed to cry right now, right? Oh, let me get a tissue. Oh, I'm crying. I'm crying. I'm crying. Oh, I'm crying. There was like a little bit too much of that instead of just feel what you need to. Believe me, if I felt, I would have cried. I cry in things when I feel things. I didn't even feel a moment where I was like, oh, and I know how this ends. And it's so sad. The whole thing is so sad. I get it. But
I think what we were talking about recently, too, is if you and I had never seen the movie or read the book and we went into this cold turkey, what would our feeling have been?
I don't know if you're going to agree with me, but I still don't know if I would have felt. I would have seen them die at the end and I would have. Oh, spoiler alert. I hope you all.
Well, we already said that in the beginning.
When they die at the end, I would have still felt like, okay, wait, but I saw 30% from this actor, 30% from this actor.
I know, but
you know,
I still think the point is we're comparing it to something that we already know. So if you only knew it as this, what would your feelings have
been? Yeah, I mean,
I think it's too hard to go back and try to figure that out because this is what was given to us. And they had a blank canvas with this musical to do whatever they wanted. And this is what they gave us. I am going to go back to something, though. This musical definitely knows its audience.
Totally.
And it definitely knows who it's catering to. And I don't necessarily know if that's you and me.
Sure. Sure.
So this musical might do really well, but it might not be what the theater world wants.
And just to clarify, I love this story so much and the tragedy and the romance that I was hoping. I believe me, when we heard that If This Is Love song released by you, I was like, oh my gosh, because I think that's the best song of the show. If I had to, from a writing standpoint, from an emotional state, that's the best song of the show for me. I feel when I hear that song, and I don't think anything else held up, unfortunately.
Well, I'm going to say something. I'm definitely going to listen to the soundtrack once it does come out, because I do feel like it has potential and is very listenable.
Mm-hmm.
So we might be kind of like not fully gelling it with right now, because it doesn't have those standout moments that when you leave, you're still humming. I mean, you can hum this soundtrack because it's the same thing in every single song.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say I'm probably going to listen to it because I do like Ingrid Michaelson. I do like her music, and I would like to actually hear what the score sounds like, because I do think there are some beautiful lyrics in these songs. We just haven't gelled with them yet.
It would be nice to listen to it again, for sure. I do understand the mixed reviews that this got. I don't think it needs to be like completely poo-pooed. Like, I don't think we need to. This is the worst thing. I've seen much worse things than this. Believe me, I have.
Right, but this show does have the potential to have a Waitress fan base that keeps the show chugging along.
And sure, and it will, and it's selling, and it will. So, deal.
I mean, it's a very saturated season. So, like, and we're just at the beginning of this.
And this was announced a long time ago, before half of things this season. Right. This has been in the running for a long time.
So, like, hey, it's here, and we have it. I mean, I think Chicago raved about it a lot. And I was going to say one thing. How is hype building in the theater industry right now kind of either making or breaking a show? Because I do feel like the New York audiences were like, oh, okay, The Notebook's coming. Everyone raved about it in Chicago. So, like, we're going to love it, right? And now we're all kind of going and we're like,
but there's underdogs coming in. There's a lot coming in this season. And this is just the start.
Right. But if we go back to the hyping up of a show, something like Illinois right now is like dark horse coming in. Not enough time to hype build it.
Well, the most New York audiences I hear are loving Lempicka. And that's kind of a no-name show right now that has to build an audience too.
Yeah.
So love it. So we'll see. Huh? Oh my gosh, we're almost out of time here. Okay, let's do our final wrap up. Final thoughts on The Notebook on Broadway, Jeff, go.
Final thoughts? I mean, I'm on the fence overall with the show in general. I think I probably liked it a little bit more than you. I mean, I was entertained. It had good moments. I do think that this might fall into tourist trap category, and a lot of people will go see it for that. I just don't know what the longevity is for the show. I don't think it fully is in, like, this is going to sweep at the Tonys that I was originally thinking the show might.
Agree. I was underwhelmed. It was a lot of forgettable moments, some nice moments. Like I've said it multiple times here, I think Miriam Plunkett's the strongest thing, and I hope I see her get a lot of nominations for things. And it's fine. The show is fine. I'm not sitting here raving about it. I'm not poo-pooing it. It just wasn't what I wanted it to be based on how emotionally connected I felt to the film.
Yeah.
And so... And that's it.
Yeah.
So there we go. That does wrap up our discussion of the episode today. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into The Notebook on Broadway. We will share the link here with ticket information in our description of the episode.
And don't forget, we want to hear from you. Continue the conversation with us on Instagram and TikTok at Half Hour Podcast. Let us know your thoughts on The Notebook.
And if you enjoyed our show, please leave us a review. Your feedback helps us bring more theater to you. And remember, you can listen to past episodes. Stay tuned for some upcoming ones as well.
Until next time, I'm Chet.
And I'm Richie, saying ta-ta for now.
Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RiseTheatre.org, because only together we rise.